Do you mind? We're playing through. Here's Froggy, Brian Golf, and Wacker.
Here with the Playing Through podcast, it's Froggy from Elvis Duran and the Morning Show at Froggy Radio on Twitter. Brian Golf not here with us today, so me and Brian Wacker from Golf Digest at Brian Wacker 1 on Twitter.
Good morning, and today we are also joined by
Billy Horschel.
There you go.
Good morning, Billy. How are you, buddy?
Yeah. Morning, guys. How are we doing?
Florida Gator extraordinaire. Billy, I think Billy may be the only guy that likes the Gators more than I do. Billy, thank you so much for taking the time to be on the podcast. Have so much we want to talk to you about. So what's going on with you?
Not much, man. I've been good. How about you boys?
We're doing good. Bay Hill in the books. Was a good tournament. Rory went on one hell of a run there at the end.
Unbelievable. And then, of course, Tiger Woods, the needle himself. Billy, I mean, you've known Tiger for a while now. What did you make of what we saw from Tiger this past week at Bay Hill?
I think it's pretty impressive to see what he's done, you know, even since he come back. Mm. Not just Bay Hill, but Tampa Bay Hill, what he did out at
Honda, of course, not before.
Honda, L.A. You know, obviously I know he missed cut at L.A., but, you know, I think it shows you how talented this guy is. There's not many people in this game of golf who can take, you know, really, what, 2 years off or a year and a half off of this game, deal with the back injuries he's had to go through, the surgeries and everything, and come back and play this quickly, this great, right away. I mean, also, another thing I look at is the desire for him to want to, you know, come back and do this. Because, listen, he could have easily walked off into a sunset, 14 majors, 80-something tour victories type deal. I mean, the guy has done everything you could ever want to do in this game of golf type deal. In my generation, he's the greatest golfer I've ever seen. I mean, it just shows you how talented and how much this guy really does want to compete again. And also, I think he just wants to go out on his own terms. And that's what I've told people for the last couple of years. I said, if Tiger comes back, he comes back because he wants to come back, and he wants to walk away going on his own terms, not because of an injury type deal. And, I think it's pretty impressive.
Billy, are you surprised at where we are? So let's really be honest. We're five tournaments in. He played Torrey. He missed the cut at the Genesis, played well at the Honda, played really good at the Valspar, played pretty good at Bay Hill until he had the hiccup on the 16th tee. Are you surprised where we are five tournaments in?
That's a great question. You know, when you think about the Tiger that I saw growing up, would I be surprised? No. But when you think about everything he's had to go through the last couple of years with surgeries and, you know, swing issues and technique issues and chipping issues and this and that. And for him to come back and really in three events, get back in the heat of competition, get back in a chance of winning, it's pretty impressive. So it shows you how healthy he is in the sense that his back's holding up well. He's able to practice the way he needs to practice to be able to compete at the level that he needs to compete at. Am I surprised? Yeah. But at the same time, I'm not, because, I mean, this guy is a once-in-a-lifetime athlete. There's not many like him in the sense of way he is physically talented, but the way he is also mentally talented.
Along those lines, Billy, I'm always curious to ask guys about this. Specifically, you bring up two great points, not just the physical end of it, but just his desire to be back out there. And we're seeing, I think, a little bit different Tiger Woods, maybe more appreciative, maybe just enjoying it more, the whole process. Was there a part of you that thought this guy was done, that we would never see him play again?
You know what? I had a conversation with him 2 years ago. This was 2016 down in Bahamas.
Sure.
The first time his hero event was in Bahamas, and he'd just come off his, I think, his first back surgery, yes. I think it was. He just didn't look good. You know, he obviously it's warm down there and everyone's sweating, but he just looked like he was struggling to not move a little bit, but, you know, just really sweating a lot because I think he just had a recent surgery and, you know, just was struggling type deal physically. And I had a conversation with him, and, you know, I usually don't talk about golf much with him. I don't talk about, because obviously he gets bombarded by a lot of guys, and I know he wants to help out players, but I more or less talk to him about sports and his kids and what they're doing. And I just tell when you talk to him about his kids, he lights up. And he loves his kids, and he loves being involved with his kids. And he pretty much told me, he said, Billy, I don't really, you know, if I can come back, that's great. But, man, I'm just trying to be healthy so I can play with my kids. I want to be able to go kick the soccer ball around with them. I want to go to the practice with them. I want to go do this with them. You know, that's what I want to do. And so that gave me the sense that, you know, he was fine if he wasn't able to play golf. He wanted to play again, and if he physically couldn't do it anymore, you know, that was going to be a little bummer, but he wanted to be physically able to be able to do activities with his kids. So, yeah, I mean, there was a point where I wasn't sure if he was going to really come back, because obviously the back's a tricky thing, and you know, you have one back surgery, and then you have two back surgeries, and right. You have a third one that's a fusion. You know, you're like, wow, where is he physically? And it's pretty amazing to see all the back surgeries he's gone through and this fusion, that he looks as mobile as he's ever been. He looks as flexible. He doesn't look any hampered at all. Yeah, does he have the same movement as he did in his 20s? No, but no one does when they're in their early 40s,
right.
Or their early 20s. But it's amazing to see how mobile he is with the back surgeries and the fusion. So, like I said, it's nice to see him back. I mean, it's awesome. I love the guy to death, and he's, as I argue, and I will argue with anyone, that he's the biggest guy in our sport. He moves the needle more than anyone. You can add Dustin and Rory and Jordan and Jason and whoever else I'm missing in there. You can add 5 or 7 guys, and they don't even come close to moving the needle as much as Tiger does.
It really is. It's good to have him back. It's put golf back on the front page of every single publication. It really is a big deal for golf, and it's great to see Tiger's will. He appears to have the will to win again, which is so important. I believe that's why he's playing so much better. But speaking of playing better, Billy, for the first 3 rounds this week at Bay Hill, you were right in the mix. You were 6th place, playing really, really good, and I heard in an interview that you have taken a different mental approach to the game of golf, and that's really helped you out.
Yeah, I'm always, you know, every day, you know, I'm always trying to figure out how I can get better. You know, I work my butt off. I feel like I'm one of the hardest workers out there on tour. And so it was sort of frustrating that a lot of the hard work I've put in since last October to really make some changes in my game just weren't showing up. And to be honest with you, for the last year and a half, it's sort of been a struggle for me. I even though I won Byron Nelson, I've had some other good finishes, I've just struggled out on the golf course more than I've ever have, you know, in my professional career or even in college that I can remember. So I just had to look at myself in the mirror, and obviously I've been thinking about working with a mental coach, getting work back with a sports psychologist. I've had worked with one in the past for a short period of time type deal, and I knew I needed to work with somebody. I just didn't know who it needed to be, and I didn't know what I needed or what I was looking for. And so I really don't like going into anything without having a grasp a little bit of what is caused me issues,
right.
What I'm sort of may need to work on. And obviously I go in there talking, having an understanding or having an idea of what I'm having issues with and this and that, and then it just expands from there. You know, I don't like going in there sort of blankly not knowing anything about why I've been struggling, because then I think it takes the process a little bit longer. So talking with TA, my teacher, Todd Anderson, and my team, we started working with a guy named Dr. Brett McCabe. He works with a lot of other players out on tour, Patton Kizzire being one of them. And, you know, talked to a couple guys. They highly recommended him and the way he goes about things. So, you know, it just needed to clear some things up in my head. And am I anywhere close to where I want to be mentally? No, but it sort of got me going back in the right road that I've always been. And I've become, whenever I finish with a tournament or finish with a round of golf, I can always, the first thing I thought about was what I did positive that day. You know, take the positive away, really, you know, feel good about it. You know, yes, you think about what you did wrong, you know, what you could have done better, but you walk away with having the positives being the bigger thing and looking at it that way. And for about a year now, I've been, you know, just so focused on what I didn't do well and trying to play perfect golf and some negative stuff. And, you know, we all go through little things like this. And for me, it sort of was a little unusual because I've never really struggled, you know, mentally. And when I have, I've been able to go back off some stuff that I've always done to get me out of my little funk. But unfortunately for last year, I haven't been able to do that. So that's why I need to start working with Brett and get on a good foundation.
Would you credit the first three rounds that you played so well at Bay Hill? Would you credit some of that to your work with Brett?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I credit that. I mean, you know, I started working with him after the first round of Valspar. You know, I called him up and we had a conversation and he gave me some things to focus on. Valspar for my second round, I played a really good first nine holes at Valspar, and unfortunately I missed the cut. I doubled my last hole and missed the cut by a shot. But what Brett and I did, you know, just try to make it simple, try to get back into the way I used to think a little bit. And we're just really starting, you know, it's just a beginning type deal. We haven't really gone into too much plan type deal, just sort of get me thinking a little bit back to the way I used to. But yeah, the first three rounds were a lot of what Brett and I had talked about. Also, you know, I tweaked the practice a little bit. I can be strong-headed sometimes, and I don't listen to what Todd may want me to do on the practice tee a lot to prepare for rounds and everything. And so I just changed that up a little bit to give myself a little bit more confidence, a little bit more belief in the shots I need to hit on the course. So, yeah, I sort of, you know, taken a couple steps back and try to be a little more open and you know, do what guys have been wanting me to do a little bit, because like all of us, you know, we're great players and we feel like we know what we need to do, and I feel like I listen fairly well, but I need to do a better job of listening to what my team wants me to do to get me to play well on a daily basis.
How difficult is that, Billy, particularly when, you know, we see this a lot where guys will have a longtime caddy, a longtime coach, whatever it may be. How difficult that can be sometimes when you've had a certain group.
The same message for so long.
The same message and trying to not tune it out. And obviously you and Todd have worked wonders together for a long time now to overcome that and make sure you're not sort of tuning out just that everyday voice.
You know, for me, the great thing I expect from my team, and they know it, is I want them to be honest with me. And there's times where, when they are honest, I don't want to listen to it at that time. But, you know, let me, you know, tell it to me, and I may not respond well right away. Give me a little bit of time, maybe 30 minutes, hour, a little bit to just sort of reflect, and I'm going to look at it and be like, hey, you know, you're right, I messed up. And, you know, it's a struggle, yeah, when you have... You know, I've been working with Todd now for 10 years, and, you know, Josh, my caddy, has been with me for a year now, and my staff guy has been with me for 4 or 5 years now. So I do a very good job of listening, but sometimes, you know, I can do a better job of just that. You know, and the other thing, when you talk about players and you see guys switch teachers a lot or someone who's been with a teacher, you know, the thing I see there is that, you know, a lot of these players, when they switch, they don't know their golf swing very well. They think they know what their golf swing is. They think they know what they do well. And then they go to a teacher that they see what this teacher's done with this player, that player, and they think they're going to have this similar results. And I think they've got a skewed view of what, you know, makes their golf swing work. And so they go to this new teacher thinking that this teacher's going to help me, and it actually hurts them because of what he's teaching or how he teaches it or what he wants you to do. Is really what you haven't done your entire life. It's totally against what you do.
Right. It's almost like starting over and trying to rebuild the wheel.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm not one to change teachers. I'm never leaving TA. TA is, you know, in my opinion, the greatest teacher that there is in the game right now, and probably one of the best of all time, the greatest of all time. But, you know, it baffles me when guys go from, you know, a certain teacher that they've had for 10 years to someone who's more of a, you know, when I say method teacher, puts everybody in one, teaches every player the same or tries to get everyone to swing the same type deal, which doesn't make sense to me because everybody's body type's different. Everyone does things differently. And then you see guys, you know, they've hit a cut their whole life. Like, well, now I want to hit a draw. Like, why do you want to hit a draw? Like, you've been so successful hitting a cut. Now you're going to this teacher trying to hit a draw. You know, that just does not work.
Yeah, if I'm not mistaken, that's what happened with Martin Keimer. He had hit a cut forever and then decided after ascending to number one in the world, decides, oh, I want to hit a draw now. We haven't heard from Martin in a while. I think that happens a lot. People want to do what they can't do instead of dancing with what got you where you are.
Exactly. And the thing is, like, you know, we're always trying to get better. If you're not trying to get better in this game, then you're falling back. But you've got to, you know, when I look how I can get better, you know, I try to make sure it's nothing dramatic that's going to affect my performance in the short term or even in the long term, really. I'm looking at things that are going to help me improve my performance short term that's going to also improve my performance long term going forward. I don't want to do something that's going to mess me up right away and that may mess me up long term where it's going to take me even longer to get out of what, you know, we're trying to improve.
You said that you had been working on the mental approach to the game. And I know that on Sunday, there was an incident on the 14th tee where you had gotten upset with a shot. And that's going to happen, absolutely. But I know it wasn't fan involved, but I wanted to ask you, because one of the big stories out of this week was that Rory thinks that they should possibly limit alcohol sales because the fan interaction is starting to get out of control. So my question is, it's kind of a two-part question. One, do you feel like the atmosphere that we've created at the Wasted Management Open in Phoenix, is that bleeding over into other tournaments? And do you think there is a problem with fans getting out of control at tournaments?
You know, I think the only issue I have with, you know, the environment at 16 at Waste Management and tournaments trying to recreate that is that par 3 at Waste Management is such an easy par 3. You're never going to make more than bogey on that hole. I mean, we got a 9-iron at most to a fairly big green, and it's a 155-yard golf shot, 165-yard golf shot. So it's an easy par 3. So when you see, you know, other tournaments start building these stands. And,
like, for example, at the Honda, they're doing the Bear's Trap. That 17 there, they have almost surrounded. They can't on the right side because there's houses and water, but on the left side of that hole, it is stands all the way down, and it's a little rowdy on Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, I mean, it's rowdy there in the afternoon, and I've expressed my opinions about it a year or two ago. And, you know, for my thing is that's a really tough golf shot, and, you know, it's not easy. I mean, even on a practice round, everyone's feeling, you know, don't want to hit it in the water. So, I mean, it's something that, you know, I think I love the energy. I love feeling energy out of tournaments because I play off that. I feed off that. That's who I am. That's what I've been my entire career. But do I think it's gone out of control a little bit? Sure. You know, do I know what we need to do to make it better? I'm not sure. You know, only thing I can say is, you know, all we ask for as players, just respect us. Respect us when we're hitting shots and just give us a little bit of respect walking down the fairway. I'm probably a little bit different than most players. I sort of chime back at fans. You know, I think they think it's pretty funny that I'm sort of chiming back, so they give me a little bit less of a hard time type deal because right. I'm sort of playing along with whatever they may say. You know, if a Tennessee guy says, go Vols, I say 11-1 to him type deal. I said, you know, I mean, you guys got a lot of balls to say go Vols to me when you guys you've only beaten us once in the last 12 years.
Right.
Now, if someone says go Knowles to me, I can't say anything.
Right.
Because, I mean, they've kicked our ass in football and basketball. So, you know, I sort of play along at certain moments and everything, and no one said anything personal to me. And I think if that's when it gets out of control is when people start crossing the line and going to a personal level.
And that's what Rory said happened this weekend. Rory said that somebody was yelling his wife's name, saying inappropriate things about his wife after shots, and things like that are uncalled for. But I don't know that limiting alcohol sales, I don't know that it's as much alcohol as it is the problem, is that it's social media. Somebody wants to be heard on TV, and they want to go viral. I don't know that there's a way to stop that.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I'm not sure if alcohol sales is going to stop that. That's for sure. I mean, you're going to have people be boisterous no matter what. You know, there's times when you hear fans say something, I'll say, hey, I didn't realize your ticket said comment at will. You know, so joking around with them. But we'll see what happens with everything. I mean, I've told the tour, I said, listen, if someone says something personal to me about my family that crossed the line, we're going to have an incident in our hands. I said, then you guys may take it seriously. I said, we're one incident away from a player going into the crowd a little bit and handling a situation
right.
that has crossed the line. And the tour knows that, and the tour is trying everything they can. The tournament is trying everything they can to make it better. But, you know, it's tough because you almost, when you have 20, 30,000 fans at a tournament, you need, you know, what you probably need 20 to 30, you know, security personnel on every hole type deal to deal with incidences that may arise out there. So obviously it means more money has to be spent, means that the security people, the officers have to volunteer more time. So, listen, there's a lot that needs to be figured out, and I think the tournaments and I think the PGA Tour and everyone's trying to do everything they can to try and figure out what's the best way to go about it. You know, I think all players, I think we can all agree we love fans. We want as many fans out there as possible. We want them to be excited. We want them to have the energy to cheer everybody on. But at the same time, you know, we just ask for a little bit of respect, you know, at certain times and not do anything personal type deal, because that's just out of line in our opinion.
Billy, another hot topic of late, of course, has been distance, the ongoing distance debate. And again, we saw it last week at Bay Hill, Rory hitting that 373-yard drive on Sunday.
But 50 yards of that was roll.
Much of that was roll, which was one of the factors, conditions that play into it, certainly. But I know you've been pretty vocal about this topic in terms of the ball versus the club versus the players. I think it's a combination of kind of all the above. It certainly starts... A big part of it's with the driver and the technology behind what we're seeing in those clubs. And then you look at other factors, players,
Trackman,
players getting dialed in, all of that. The ball, certainly a small part of it as well. But I'm curious where you fall on the distance debate, whether you think there should be a tour ball, whether there shouldn't be, whether they should dial it back and so forth.
Yeah, I've been pretty vocal on this for a year and a half now, about this, maybe 2 years. I don't think the ball is need to be dialed back. I think the ball is fine at where it is. I think, you know, you got to look at multiple factors. You got to look at the guys out on tour taller now by 2 inches than they were 10 years ago. You know, swing speeds have increased, you know, over 2 miles per hour on average on PGA Tour in the last, I think, 7 years. You know, the TrackMan is a major, probably the biggest component. Two guys hitting it further with the driver, because now you're launching it with the perfect launch conditions with the right amount of spin and everything else. So, you know, the other thing that people understand is, so let's say someone gains 10 to 12 yards with a driver. But is anyone really gaining 10 to 12 yards with the irons? I mean, if you walked up and down the range of a PGA Tour event and you ask the guys and they respond honestly, I'll call BS if I think they aren't. And I say, how much further are you guys hitting your irons now than you did 10 years ago? And if someone says they're hitting it 15 yards further, you know, I'll be mildly shocked. I can see 5 yards at most, but I still hit my 7-iron the same distance I did in college. Maybe I hit it probably 3 or 4 yards further, maybe 5 yards further, but that's because my swing speed's increased, and that's because I'm in better shape than I was in college. You know, it's not because of the golf ball. The golf ball's not the issue at all. It's the one of the least issues, you know, for distance. And I think if the USGA goes about making it, you know, making a rule where the pro ball has to be reduced or another ball needs to be created for just pro golfers to reduce the distance, it doesn't matter. It hurts our game, because who benefits? No one benefits anymore. You know, the long guy is still going to be long. The short guy is still going to be long. You're not bringing anyone closer together.
Right.
And I think it may be suicidal for the USGA to do this, because then you're going to have two sets of rules, because obviously you already have tireless stats against the golf ball being rolled back. I saw the other day TaylorMade, I think his CEO David Abels, came out against rolling back the golf ball.
Correct.
The PGA of America had put something out about being against rolling back the golf ball. The tours released their findings about the golf ball and their stance of being against it. You know, the only manufacturer that seems to be, you know, for rolling back the golf ball is Bridgestone. And I found out the other day that the reason they're only for rolling back the golf ball is because they hold the only patent right now for the golf ball being rolled back. So, yeah, I think the USGA has got to be very careful in where they go with this, because I think if this does happen, they want to roll back the golf ball, you're going to see two sets of rules created. You're going to have a pro set and an amateur set.
Well, they also need to, I mean, the fairways are extremely firm. Like, another guy that joins us on the podcast, he's a part of our team, Brian Golf, he played Bay Hill about 3 months ago. He said on 16, he hit the ball, and the ball was in a yard of his pitch mark. And he's a very good player. he said yesterday that ball rolled 50 yards when Rory hit that shot. You saw Bud Cauley's ball roll a long ways when Tiger's ball hit it on that second drive on 16. So the fairways are very hard. And what about just moving the rough in a little bit or making it a little taller, making it a little harder to hit the fairway would then probably roll back some of this ball distance where it's harder to hit the fairway and the ball doesn't go as far when it does land.
Listen, I've always said, we out on tour, the courses that we play, if you get 20 yards of roll on a golf ball, that's about average. That's very average on tour. You know, we're getting upwards of 20 plus to 30 yards of roll on a tour golf course. Very rarely do we not get at least 20 yards of roll. When I play TPC Sawgrass, I hit clubs in the TPC to the holes there 51 other weeks out of the year where during a tournament I'm hitting two or three less clubs because the fairways are so firm and fast. So I think if, we soften up the fairways, we made the fairways a little bit longer, we brought the rough lines in. At Bay Hill, Bay Hills are some of the biggest fairways we play all year too. So, it gives the guys a little bit more opportunity to hit it. Be a little bit more wild, but still going to find the fairway. I think if we had firmer, faster greens, that would, be, longer rough. There's things we can do, and not many guys, when I see someone, when they say, they talked about Dustin last year at 18 at Northern Trust when he and Jordan were in the playoff, and how about how he hit this 350-yard drive on 18? Well, you know what? If you watch TrackMan, he flew it 310 or 315 yards. It's not like he's flying at 330. When someone says they fly at 330 or 340, it's not happening. And if it is, it's because it's pumping down wind and there's some other factor type deal. The average guy on tour, the Rorys, the Dustins, Jason's days, when they go at it on a 80-degree day with no wind, calm conditions, I think the best they can actually fly is 320. Maybe they can fly it further. They can prove me wrong with that. But I think the best they can fly is 320. That's not, in my opinion, that's not long. I mean, that's super long, but it's not like, oh my gosh, that's we need to do something. They need to only be able to fly at 280 type deal. We'll see what happens. I don't think the golf ball is going to be rolled back. I don't think USGA is going to go down that line because I think, unfortunately, they've lost a lot of the appeal that they have in the game of golf, what people think of them. I think they no longer are the they don't move the needle. They, the players, the PGA Tour players are the ones that people want to copy. People follow. People want to do what the PGA Tour players do. It's not the USGA anymore. And so, if the PGA Tour players came out and against the USGA, then majority of the amateurs are going to follow us.
Oh, and absolutely. And the ball distance is not bad. For example, earlier in the year when Dustin Johnson hit that amazing drive in Hawaii that almost went in, I still don't know how that ball stopped before it went in. That was a top video on SportsCenter. It was all over the internet, people watching that ball, which is then introducing the game of golf to people. If he hits that ball 280, chips up and then makes birdie, nobody's talking about that. And so the ball going too far is not hurting the game. Billy, I really appreciate your time. Real quick, before you go, would be very bad if we didn't, number one, congratulate you on the hole-in-one that you had in Jim Nance's backyard.
First swing, first attempt.
I mean, that was ridiculous.
Well, let me give me a little insight in there. It was the first swing of the competition. It wasn't the first swing that I had on that little shot.
Okay, here we go. Now we get to the truth.
Everyone had some practice shots and everything when they got to Jim Nance's house. I and one or two of the players happened to get finished first and get to Nance's house early. And so we had a few more extra shots to mess around with. And there was some other holes on the green. So maybe I may have taken 30 or 40 practice shots into that green.
But now it comes out.
What people understand is so I was the first one to go because my team finished first in the little competition out at Spyglass we had. And so everyone's there. So Nance is discussing the rules and what the winner gets. And so if there was a hole out, you got a prize from NetJets type deal, let's just say that.
Right.
And then there was a competition for, let's just say there wasn't a hole out, then it was going to be closest to the pin. So me being my cocky self, I say, hey, listen, what if I happen to hole out the first shot and I've got three more balls because we've got four chances? are my next three balls, am I still in the competition for closest to the pin? And so, you know, they're like, everyone's sort of laughing, and like, yeah, you're still being it. So then, obviously, you know, we start the competition. I'm like, hey, let's go ahead and let's have a walk-off. Let's finish it. First swing, ball goes in the hole. Everyone goes crazy. You know, obviously, it ended the competition for the whole out, and it took a little bit of the excitement and the air out of the competition, but it was really fun, and it was really exciting. You know, I've always wanted to have a sort of a walk-off moment, say, you know, be talking, you know, hey, I'm going to hold this and end the competition, and it just happened to be right then and there.
You know, I thought it was fabulous, but I do have to say I was disappointed in one thing. There was no gator chomp in the celebration.
Yeah. I mean, it was no gator chomp, but I think I may have broke a couple people's hands. I mean, I slapped pretty hard. So.
You did slap some hands pretty hard. You did. And real quick, also, I know you did this in a magazine article, and I want you to recap it for us real quick. Give us Billy's rules on wearing a belt.
Yeah, so, I mean, obviously, you can say they're my rules, but they're still the rules I've been told for about 4 years now. It sort of changed about 4 or 5 years ago. You know, talk to the Ralph Lauren people, and they pretty much have told me had asked at the time, hey, let's not wear a white belt unless you're wearing white pants. You know, I would say, you know, if you're going to have belts, you know, you need to have a black one, a brown one, a gray one, a white one, and a navy one. And if you have those five belts, you can work with any outfit possible. Doesn't matter what pants you have or anything else in that. And the other big thing is, you know, I see a lot of people do not iron their clothes. And if you just iron your clothes, you look a lot better than right. the wrinkles.
Right. You might score like amazing. Shit, but at least you look decent while you're scoring.
I
need to
see
back.
Billy's exactly. assessment of what the media room attire is.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, trust me, I call out everybody, even like the guys on tour. You know, obviously there's certain times where guys get new shirts from their clothing sponsor, and they're in their wrap, they're in their packages, and they're folded nice. And then they just pull them out of the package or plastic and they put them on. You can see the creases where they've been folded.
The fold lines,
like,
yeah.
Hey, buddy, I mean, like, let's just use an iron. It doesn't take more than 5 minutes. Like, it just looks like crap. You know, I'm
now, Billy, do you iron your own shirts?
I've ironed my own clothes. I've ironed my own clothes since I was 12.
Okay.
Iron all my clothes. I've done my laundry since I was 12. My mom's shrunk some of my clothes.
Damn. Brittany's a lucky woman. She didn't have to do the laundry.
Yeah, so my mom said at that point then and there, you can go ahead and do your own laundry. So I did my own laundry since I was young. And Brittany does wash my clothes once in a while. You know, earlier in our relationship, I didn't let her wash anything. I was sort of very anal about something being shrunk or something being done wrong type deal. But, you know, I've given her a little more leeway to be able to do some of my laundry now when I may be in a crunch time. So.
Right. Billy, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it. Love having you on. You've always got a home here on the podcast.
Thanks, Billy.
Thanks for your time. Play well. Awesome. We'll really pull it for you. Good luck at Augusta.
See you guys. Thanks.
Playing through with Froggy, Brian Golf, and Wacker.